From WYPR and PRX.
It's Out of the Blocks.
One neighborhood.
Everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
Our generation, my generation, did like what many people do. You know, we raise our kids, we say, you know, do right, make something of yourself, build yourself up so you can get out of here. Well, what happens then?
I have kids in my classes who carry guns, and you know, they have their ops, right? The people who they are in conflict with. But at the end of the day, they want to pass our chemistry tests.
Bullets have missed me by just a few inches. One of my childhood friends was murdered in front of me when I was 12 years old.
That's when I stopped everybody. Said, hold up. Heaven and hell didn't open their gates up. It's going to be a lot of us going. Because we're serious about this.
It's like the community is speaking and saying what they want these guys to do in order to repair the harm to the community and to make the residents of the community feel safe.
From producers Aaron Hicken and Wendell Patrick.
In collaboration with Bashira Mack.
And WBEZ.
Out of the Blocks, North Lundell.
And Chicago's West Side.
Right after this.
My name is Robert Calhoun Sr. I'm safe, sane, and sober, blessed by the best, ain't shame on, don't care who know it. I'm the co-founder of an organization in the North Lawndale area as Men Making a Difference, better known as Mad Men. My life at 17 was very exciting. I ended up in a little slight trouble, and a judge kind of made, he said, you want to be a tough guy, you want to be a bad guy, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse. And he said, look to the back of the courtroom. There was a Marine Corps sergeant, and there was a Cook County sheriff. He said, I'll let you choose which way to go. I was set off the coast of Vietnam twice for 72 days where there's no communication with anything but water and sky. And at 1 minute, it's pitch black and you can't see your finger coming into your eye. And all of a sudden, from the bombs going off, it looked like a thunderstorm. And then it goes back to pitch black. That was very shocking and scary. 1972, I was released from the Marine Corps. After my Marine Corps stitch and coming back and everything, that's when Angel Dust came about, you know, the PCP, petrocycladine, all of these things, and being introduced and keep going and everything until I found my love for my addiction. My love for addiction was cocaine.
So you were sort of simultaneous to your addiction, you were involved in the trade as well. And sort of in your role in the trade, you learned how to process it for freebasing.
Yes.
Wow, okay. That's when arrest and trial and jail happened.
I'm talking about all of 70, all the way up to 79 to when this organization was cracked. An older guy told me in prison to don't let time do you, do time. He said, and take this as a 4-year college term. So I took time out to study and choose what motivated me spiritually. I would come back to 16th Street and there was a group of men sitting playing dominoes. So that's where we started off when the shooting was noticed around us. We decided to form the group Men Making a Difference in the community. And that was when we went to our community, which was the 4-block area, and said we weren't going to tolerate it no more. We were brought into the two gangs that were there, which we knew family members for both sides. They knew us from our past. I was enjoined by most of us that had did time and everything and was back in the community had reputations. So when they go home and say, I met this guy, that guy, they would say, hey, you don't want to mess with them. They ain't them old guys ain't nothing to play with, you know. They ain't on this drive, they're going to come get you like this. So when they came at us, after us stating that we weren't going to allow it, we actually posted up in the middle of it. And that night we were sitting out, we moved our domino game up on 16th Street. From behind the building that we was behind in a vacant lot. We moved it right up there. They pulled up, jumped out of cars, two other vans pulled up. We could see people in the window. When the leader at this time jumped out, we could see the other guy on the passenger side with a gun in his hand. Immediately, someone, I don't know how, went and got the people from around the corner. So now they come around the corner. You know, you see people coming through the alley with artillery. You know these people in these vans already got artillery. That's when I stopped everybody. Said, hold up. Heaven and hell didn't open their gates up. It's going to be a lot of us going because we're serious about this. That's when the guy said, hey, Pops, if they willing to talk, we willing to talk. If they ain't willing to talk, get out the way and we can get it on. They decided at that moment it was time to talk. And the guidelines was, let's learn to live in peace. Believe it or not, the first month of it was kind of tense, you know, because we had to see if they actually bought into it. We finally knew that it was bought into when both of the supposed to be leaders went in the store at the same time, came out and went the same way and sat and had a drink. And since then, that day, there's been only two shootings in the community. We've have my organization has three citations from each commander of the 10th District at that time for keeping the violence down, especially the gun violence in our community.
So restorative justice is so hard to explain, but part of it is it's about building relationships with people. It's a process where you sit in circle, you have your talking piece, and everybody knows that whoever has the talking piece, you know, that's the person who talks. It's considered a safe space. My name's Audrey Dunford, and I am a third generation North Londellian. And my role in the court right now, I'm a circle keeper along with, it's maybe five other circle keepers there. So Monday through Friday or Saturdays, we get people from the community together with the person who caused the harm that was sent over from the court, and we have circle. And we discuss, like, how did you get here? The court is called the North Londell Restorative Justice Court, but it's some criteria that they have to meet before they come to the court. It has to be a nonviolent offense. You have to be between the ages of 18 to 24, and you can't have any violence in your background. So once they screen them, then they send them to North Londell, and then we take them in our court. It's not like the traditional court. It's like the community is speaking and saying what they want these guys to do in order to repair the harm to the community and to make the residents of the community feel safe. One thing that might be in the repair harm agreement is that the person need a job. So they, if they need a job, we gonna get them a job. Another thing might be that they need a high school diploma or they need some kind of schooling. They might need to, you know, write a letter to. We had one guy who stole a woman's car. So he wrote a letter to the lady and apologized to her for that. And actually he found some of her belongings in the car as well. And he returned everything to the lady that was in the car with nothing missing. So the lady, she was really happy that she participated in the court because she understood that sending him to jail was not gonna make him a better person, but him going through this process, it would. It's work. And sometimes it's people who come through, they like, nah, I'd rather just go to traditional court because they don't want to have those conversations where they have to dig deep, where they have to sit with a person from the community and that person asking them questions about, well, why was you doing this? Why did this happen? What could you have done differently? So it's a lot of work because you really got to tap into your emotions. You really got to be real and dig deep down in yourself to really talk to people. It's like a whole mind shift, a whole being shift. Like some of the guys now, like they got jobs. They like, I don't want to miss no days of work. You know, like even sometimes when they have to come back to court, they like, man, you know, I need to figure out like what I'm going to do because I don't want to miss that day of work and that kind of stuff. Like for me, that's improvement because last week you was like, I don't care about working. But now they forming these habits. They want to keep up with them. you learn so much about yourself. Like, even me, like, from doing restorative justice, from practicing it, I am not the same person that I was 5 years ago. This has really changed me. It has really made me more compassionate for people. It has made me more empathetic to people. And it just has made me more open to help people and not to always see the negative side of people. So, I mean, restorative justice, it works. It works.
So I'm going to do some jerk chicken and rice.
My favorite specialty is macaroni and cheese.
So I got some green peppers here. I'm gonna add some broccoli and some onions.
All right, so my name is Brandon Crawford. We're at the Firehouse Community Arts Center right now.
Well, he's my right-hand man, so I count on him for everything. Brandon, let me get some onions. My name is Timothy Sanders. I'm the executive chef of the Firehouse Community Arts Center. Our purpose is to train these guys trade in the culinary art field.
We cook every day for the gentlemen in the program. Usually it's between 15 and maybe 35 people.
Brandon has grown a lot. He was in the last group of guys who we trained.
Right here is open range. We also have a grill. Then we go here, we have a broaster.
A little stuff he see me doing, he'll stop working and look and check it out and come to me and ask me questions. And he's all about being a better person all around.
Just the Firehouse really expecting more out of us. That's generally what they do, kind of expect more than we expect from ourselves.
Brandon was definitely, he was always a good guy, but he's had a rough path. He's had just some different things in his life that stood in his way. My name is Derek White. I'm a lead life coach at the Firehouse Community Arts Center. Guys walk through the door with, I'll just say first, with extreme trauma. So guys have maybe seen people die, as far as close to them, friends, family members. So I see that's one of the biggest things, like, is trying to fill that tool bag with different things that they've never been accustomed to, never even had, never seen, never heard of. It's a lot of trial and error because, like I said, guys come through with extreme trauma. And then also most times as well, guys come through with a lot of maybe just a lack of love, positive love.
Our work with our workforce development centers around catering. You know, culinary arts is a discipline where you gotta follow the order of the recipe. Otherwise, you will mess up the pound cake. Otherwise, you will mess up the ribs. And it's frustrating for some guys because it causes them to slow down, causes them to focus, and they have to follow the particular process in order for them to bring out what's gonna happen. So it's a great discipline. So my name is Phil Jackson, or Pastor Phil, as I'm labeled in this neighborhood. I've been pastoring 31 years, youth and young adults. A lot of the realities that our young people and young men, specifically in our Firehouse Pact, face happen because of trauma that's affected their family, right? And so some stuff has happened because mom was dating a guy, and the guy was a drug dealer, and the guy went to jail. Now the family's lost resources. The mom is now trying to find a job and work. And so the sons were raised around that. And so now they trickle into, hey, this is how pops brought money in. So let me figure out if this is the way I'm gonna do that. And it just begins to roll over into a lifestyle, right? And so guys we work with come from places where they often aren't able to just pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, not so much because opportunities aren't there, but because of what they have been through. We work with three particular mobs in North Lawndale that are responsible for 40% of the shootings in this community. And so we try to reach and pursue the most violent young men we can, but we don't see them in that light. That's just the language to help people understand our work. I mean, we love these guys as human beings, and they are strong in being able to survive all of that and have made a choice to believe in themselves enough to be a part of what we're doing, so the outcome in life, it doesn't represent their past, right? And so the power that they have from that resiliency can change neighborhoods, communities, blocks, and generations of conflict that has happened, you know, in their life.
I retired in September of 2016, and I wrote my first feature film. It's called Red, R-E-D-D. It's an anti-gun violence story. It's about a single parent after her 10-year-old son is shot and killed. She uses her music and social media to help end gun violence. And I used all of the children right here in North Lawndale.
I want to change the world.
And they were remarkable. My name is Kimberly Dixon. We're here in North Lawndale at my home. And I have sitting here next to me my daughter, Ariel Walton.
This is a dream I remember her having when I was 3 and 4 years old. I'm going to start a production company. I'm going to write. I remember her telling my father this, sitting in our living room when I was 4 years old. I'll never forget this. And just to see her make it all happen, like, she's resilient. And to know that I'm her offspring, it just lets me know that I am that too.
I used to write little stories. And I was sharing with my children, put them on the shelf. And when I retired, I said, okay, I want to do what I want to do now. I want to do what I love doing, what I have a passion for.
I never in a million years dreamt that she would write it and come right here and say, yeah, and I finished it. And yeah, you're going to be Red. Like, I wrote Red. It's going to be about a mother. She's going to get justice for them killing her son. You know, he's on his way to school and he gets shot in the crossfire to gun violence. The friend sees it. And by the way, you're Red.
And it was so crazy. I had never seen Ariel act before. And being a parent, now I wrote the story, and even doing some scenes, I would be crying. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta stop. I wrote this, you know, but it was just, she was remarkable.
And I never thought that the role itself would require so much of me. I mean, I was born in the 90s, and I've witnessed some traumatizing things in my childhood. I've witnessed, bullets have missed me by just a few inches. One of my childhood friends was murdered in front of me when I was 12 years old. So when she wrote Red, it went back into my childhood because it's telling my stories too. In Red, it sheds a lot of light on grief itself with the many children involved, because kids don't know how to analyze exactly how they feel in order to even say what they're dealing with. So a lot of times that those very things get swept under the rug and they go on being traumatized, wounded adults, you know. So I am a product of that. I am that person.
I love this opportunity we had together, and I always, you know, it'll forever be in my heart.
She saw something in me to bring the character Red herself to life, and I was able to meet parts of myself that I didn't know existed. I give her full credit for, you know, giving me the opportunity to be able to do so and to show myself what I'm made of. So thank you.
So my name is Tiffany Childress Price, and I teach at Michelle Clark High School, sophomores, 15 and 16-year-olds in the Austin community for the years prior to this one. This is my first year there. I taught at North Lawndale College Prep High School, and that's where I started my organizing science work. We do a lot of work that's centered around community issues. So while I teach chemistry and my students learn the periodic table and what they need to be able to succeed in a freshman chemistry course, they also are learning about lead, you know, and other heavy metal contaminants like mercury, and why communities like ours are disproportionately affected by issues like lead poisoning, right? So actually yesterday, I took a group of 30 students from my high school. We went to Loyola University to the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry, and they took a bunch of soil samples, and they're going to have the soil tested and share the results with the community. So yeah, it's important to me that education goes beyond memorization, right, of just facts that are really disconnected from their lives.
Paint a picture for me through the eyes of an educator in the neighborhood of the kids that you encounter every day, what they've got going for them, what they're up against, just sort of the stories that walk in and out of the door of your classroom.
They have grit. They've got plenty of grit. They show up every day, most of them. Sometimes they're late because they're taking younger siblings to school. But the students who I've encountered really want to succeed. And it just, I think for a lot of them, they don't know how to make that happen because they're going to school in neighborhoods that have been experiencing disinvestment for decades, right? Since their grandparents or great-grandparents moved here.
and there aren't a lot of models. My students, they break my heart a lot because they want so much, and sometimes it feels like none of us know how to give them what they need and what they want. Yesterday, coming back from the Loyola trip, I was talking to a young woman named Blessing. So I was asking her what she was excited about, you know, with the summer. And she said, I hate this time of year because this is when everybody dies. And she said, in August, you know, you think you're there, right? You're at the finish line. You're about to start another school year. And then you might lose your life. And this is what our kids, our young people are experiencing in Chicago. Just you never know what the next day brings. There's so much instability. You don't know if you're going to live to your 16th birthday. Students talk a lot about, like, man, I made it to 18. I never thought I would get to this age. And that's an adult problem. You know, I think it's so easy to scapegoat our kids and just talk about these violent Black kids. But our young people are reflecting our failure. One particular Monday morning, a young lady was talking about just having a really rough weekend, but didn't want to get into details. And then she pulled me aside a few periods later and told me that her dad had overdosed on heroin and that he died and they revived him, but he's going to be in the hospital for a while until she's taking care of her sister. You know, no other adult. There was no other adult in the family who could take care of her. And here she is asking questions in chemistry class. Like, I don't know if I could have done that. I have kids in my classes who carry guns, and you know, they have their ops, right? The people who they are in conflict with. But at the end of the day, they want to pass our chemistry tests. You know, this is, when you think about what's around them, there's not much economy here, right? And so, again, our young people are reflecting what we've given to them. And I want people to know that the students who I have encountered for the past 12, 13 years, including my student teaching, they want to be doctors, engineers, they want to be music producers, they want to be cosmetologists, they have dreams. They don't want to die before the age of 16.
It's Out of the Blocks.
North Lawndale in Chicago, West Side.
One neighborhood, everybody's story.
Everybody's story.
You want to ask me my age?
Well, I don't want to. Yeah, if you're willing to tell me.
I'm 82 years old. My name is Bobby Steele, and I lived in North Lawndale for 56 years.
We're sitting in your living room right now, and you have this beautiful big window, and in front of the window is a rack with lots and lots of pictures. Talk about what's up there and the memories that go with them.
Well, first of all, I have my family there, and then I have pictures of some political allies like Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. Of course, I met Princess Di when she came to Chicago, had conversation with her.
I see there's a photo of a city street that's been renamed President Bobby Steele Avenue.
Right. That street, that was Springfield Street. That's the street on which I lived. Pretty cool. It makes me crazy when I see paper on the sidewalk. I had the unmitigated gall to become chairman of the community group to find out why we couldn't have someone look like us as precinct captain. Community was primarily African American, but the precinct captain was white and hadn't lived in the community in years. So I ran for alderman. Well, with me running for alderman of my ward, I got quite a bit of publicity. And I joined a women's group called Cook County Democratic Women. So the election following the mayoral election was a county election. So Cook County Democratic Women asked me if I would run for Cook County Board. I said, I don't know what that is. So I called Mayor Washington and I said, Harold, because he and I were on first name basis. I said, what do you know about Cook County government? He said, oh, that's a great branch of government, and they did it. They do X, Y, and Z. I said, oh, okay. I said, do you think I should run? He said, Bobby, if anybody can win, that you can. I said, okay, I'll give it a try. So I committed myself to running for county commissioner. Well, election night was probably one of the most exciting nights in my life, because you're listening to the news, And then you have people coming in to the headquarters, bringing in their total votes, and you're trying to tally them. So a lot of stuff is going on election night. Long and short of the story, as they brought in the results, we began to see we were leading. And so we won with 158,000 votes.
Do you remember what your acceptance speech was that night?
No, I don't remember my acceptance speech. All I wanted to do was go to bed. I served on the Board of Commissioners 20 years. I'm very proud to say I got some really important legislation passed while I was there. Everybody's in politics. If you live and breathe, you're in politics. Everybody is. So it's very important that we don't take it lightly about the word politics, because it's made to sound like it's something bad nowadays, but it's something essential. The country is built on political process.
Every day I politic. Before I even thought about being a politician, every day I politic. My name is Creative Scott. You all on 16th and Pulaski. My hair salon is called Creative Salon, right in the heart of North Lundell. Well, where I'm at from the west side of Chicago, 16th Street, Pulaski, this divides the gangsters. Okay, so I had a lot of friends that's been murdered or locked up in jail. So my thing is, being a young activist, that I need to change a lot of stuff in the community. So my hair salon is a safe haven in the community. I had poetry in my hair salon for 7 years. And so it changed a lot of people's lives. They was able to come off 16th Street and hear open mic poetry, some spoken word, things that can change, you know, their energy, their attitude. I'm a poet as well. I'm struggling for my rights and struggling paying for my lights and telephone bills, and why the president and government spend millions, I mean billions of billions of dollars on wars. I can't rest no more. Thought the Persian Gulf was enough. My soul shows sore, sweating pain through pores, letting that homeless person I used to ignore life worsen by sleeping in abandoned building corridors. Life got me cursing, and I can't rest no more, and it makes me want to holler.
I want to ask you about, on the wall outside your barbershop is a big sign that says Creative Scott for 24th Ward Alderman, punch number 60,
right.
February 26, 2019. That date came and went. Talk to me about that chapter, your political career.
Right. You know, people say, why you want to be into politics, a politician? And I let them know, like, I talk and talk to the brothers and sisters in the neighborhood. I talk to the elders. So I'm already into the political world. So why not go deep into it? And I figure, being an alderman, I can offer more to the community as far as resources and grants. So that's how it is with the, running for alderman. I like to create history. So out of 7 candidates, 3 got kicked off the ballot, 4 left, and I was the top candidate. I came in second. So I'm like, I'm so happy. Some people like, man, individuals came to me crying and stuff and had tears. Man, I really wanted you to win because I know you would help me with this and be for the community. And I let them know I am a winner. So it's okay. And I have a chance to do it again. And I feel amazing to be a candidate. I'm watching the news and I'm seeing my numbers on the news. Me and the incumbent, my numbers come up. I'm like, wow. Tears coming out my eyes just because of that. You know, just watching that, being on the news and hearing my name, and that's like, it's amazing. So it touched my heart personally, you know, just to be able to be a candidate. And another great thing I got of all of this, my son made 18 years old. He was able to register to vote. And when he voted for his father. That's history right there. When he get older, man, when I first voted, it was for my father. I love that. So I don't feel bad about none of that. You know, I'm happy. Every day I wake up, I'm ready to achieve a goal, and I'm happy, and I do the same thing, and I will run again, and everything will be much better. But until then, I'm going to continue politicking.
What I've learned in business is you have to have multiple things that you're working with, because maybe I might not make as much money selling honey, but I might make some money selling my bath products and my beauty products. Or I'm coming out with a new drink product called Honey BT. It's my honey with alkaline water, and I carbonate that.
My name is Thad Smith. The name of my company is called Westside B-Boys, and we are in Douglas Park in North Lawndale. Douglas Park is one of the largest parks in the city of Chicago. More than 250 species of birds come to this park every single year. This park is beautiful, but it's so underutilized. So before I got into beekeeping, I was homeless. And Douglas Park was the epicenter for me. If you look right across here, there's like a little patch of land. Man, I just come there and just lay there, go to sleep. It was so quiet. Nobody came to bother you. Nobody. Here's what happened. I had a house, bought a house, but didn't have money to pay for the house. You know, we lost the house. So moved in with my brother-in-law, and then me and my brother-in-law didn't get along. So he asked me to leave the house. So I left the house, left my wife there. And so at that moment, I became homeless. I know it was two winters. I'll put it to you that way. That's how I remember it. Can't figure out the days, but I know it was two winters. So being homeless, you are a target for every single scam, blah, 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 because you're nothing. You are insignificant. And if they can get money out of you, they'll use you and then freaking throw you away and don't care about you. There's always these guys who want you to cash checks. But what they want you to do is use your own freaking information. That's what happened with me. I cashed some checks. I made some money, you know. And when you're homeless, when you got $200 in your pocket, that's a good thing. You know, you get to spend some money. But then eventually there was a warrant for my arrest. And I knew there was a warrant for my arrest. And so finally got caught. Man, I spent like 8 months in jail. Yeah, I spent like 8 months. So when I came back, they have a program called the U-Turn Permitted Program through North Lawndale Employment Network. And it was fantastic. I loved it. They hired me at Sweet Beginnings. And Sweet Beginnings is beekeeping. And that's how I got into beekeeping. They actually hired me as their apprentice beekeeper. And so as I learned the business, I understood what was going on in beekeeping here in the city of Chicago. And that was really the change for me. That's when I started Westside B-Boys. Bees, honeybees are a metaphor. Honeybees are not native to the United States. They're colonizers. And, you know, Black Panther was a big deal, so everybody understands what colonization is. There is no ambiguity behind that anymore. On the south side and the west side, there's a lot of vacant land. So that's why bees are becoming significant, because people want to take advantage of that vacant land. However, before the honeybees got here, there's 20,000 species of bees on this planet, about 800 here in Illinois, maybe about 100 here in Chicago. But these honeybees are taking away the resources from those native bees that were here before. And so I tell people, it's like bringing a Walmart in when you've had all these little corner stores. Now that Walmart's going to suck all those resources out, because honeybees can produce 100 honeybees a day. And when you're talking about native bees, they're solitary. So a honeybee will just crowd them out, take up all the resources. And now if they don't have anything to lay their eggs, that species is going to die. Taking care of the native population first, or our people here in this hood, before we start to bring in other things, is key.
One, two, three, four, five.
You have a fantastic voice. You sound a little bit like Morgan Freeman. Yeah, you knew I was going to say that.
and before Morgan Freeman, it was the guy who did the voice for Darth Vader. Oh, James Earl Jones. Yeah. My name is Paul Norrington. We're on the 4200 block of 21st Place. And this area, approximately a 16 block area, is known as the K-Town Historic District. Oh, Costner, Kildare, Keeler, Colin, Kilpatrick. In the early history of Chicago, they were coming up with a street naming scheme. And so this one city worker, and I don't remember his name, came up with the idea of doing it alphabetically from the state line with Indiana and just going every mile and changing it. So we're the K's. My father was born in 1916 in a small town in Widener, Arkansas. His family were sharecroppers. So he worked, and when he got in his early 20s, he left home and went down the road about 30 miles to live on his own to a little larger town called Brinkley, Arkansas. There he met my mother. Eventually, they got married. My father went off to World War II. Then they moved up here. They worked very hard and they pooled their money and finally they bought this place, and that was in 1959. The family has been here since then.
You're living in the house that you grew up in, the same house that your parents bought.
Yeah, you know, life carries you places. But I came back to take care of my mother. She died and I stayed. But yeah, those sidewalks out there, I ran up and down and played on those sidewalks when I was 7 years old. This is my home. My parents' generation was our greatest generation. They fought the war. They went out and they, although young people were the body of the civil rights movement, they were the minds. They're the ones who got out there and really pushed it. And because of that, I was exposed to other things in life. Our generation, my generation, did like what many people do. You know, we raise our kids, we say, you know, do right, make something of yourself, build yourself up so you can get out of here. Well, what happens then? What happens to the community when all our brain trust leaves? I want people to go out, make something of themselves, do everything they're supposed to do in this state and build. And that's what they did. Our generation did not. We left.
You came back, though. You came back because of your mom.
Because of my mother, yeah. Yeah, because of my mother.
We're sitting next to this piano that I assume was your mom's piano.
Yes.
Did your mother ever teach you how to play the piano?
I have a sister who's 10 years older than me, a brother who was 5 years older than me, and me. None of us play the piano.
When's the last time you heard that piano played?
I'll get on it periodically and do something, tinkle, 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 but other than that, no.
Wendell here is a classically trained pianist. What do you think about the idea of Wendell giving this thing a spin?
That would be something, yeah.
Yeah, maybe just try a little melody here.
This looks like a spinet. Thank you for letting me take it for a spin. I appreciate that.
Now I did get flashbacks just then. I did picture my mother's fingers going across the keys on that. Cool. Thank you.
I want to go ahead and let listeners to this podcast know that this episode here would not be possible without the help of field producer Bashira Mack, who's sitting here. And Bashira, I want to give you a chance to introduce yourself, talk about how you got acquainted with North Lawndale, and tell the story of meeting Kiera, who I think was the first person you really kind of got into a conversation with in the neighborhood.
Well, my name is Bashira Mack. I am a multimedia journalist based in Chicago, Illinois. I picked North Lawndale because I had some experience in the community, but not a whole lot. And I just knew that there was a lot more about North Lawndale that I wanted to get to know. And so this was a great entry point for me to do that. I spent a lot of time at the Green Tomato Cafe. And I think the first time I was there, Kiera was the first person that I met. It was an early morning, and there were maybe about three of us in the cafe at the time. And I was just putting my bags down and getting settled, and she came over, had the most bubbly presence. And she, her first words to me were, "So what do you do?" And it was really great. It's kind of put you on the spot, like, oh, what do I? Okay, so here's what I do. I'm a field producer. I'm in North Lawndale. Here's why I'm here. I'm trying to get to know people who are in North Lawndale. And from there, you know, conversation got started, and I learned about Kiera, and she mentioned that she had just moved to North Lawndale, and I thought it was pretty interesting getting to know somebody who was probably just as new to the community as I was. And so it's pretty great to be able to come back and sit down with her and talk to her more about her growth in the neighborhood as well as my own.
I'm just a bold individual, and I want to know people. My name is Kiera Chester, and I've been here for 4 months now. And what brought me here is I'm kind of sort of engaged to a guy, so I moved here for a guy.
You have a great laugh. Has anyone ever told you you have a great laugh?
No.
Yeah, you do.
Do I?
It is beautiful.
No, I didn't know that. But thanks. My style is like off the chain. I just basically go with what I feel. So if I like feel like dazzling it up, putting on a crown or whatever the case may be, I just go with it. My style is pretty unique and it's kind of different, but it's I don't know. It's just pretty cool.
You've got purple hair with gold in it. You've got a yellow dress on.
Yes.
You've got some jewels on today.
Yes.
You've got silver sandals on.
Yes.
You're any special occasion today, or this is just
no.
How you felt like dressing today?
This is how I felt like dressing. So every day I wake up and I feel like a queen. So if I'm feeling like a queen, I'm dressing up and I'm showing up as the queen I am. I see myself as a performer and a singer and also being a motivational speaker. So however way I can tie those both in, I'm going to do it. But yeah, I see myself being this superstar who's impacting and being like a positive inspiration to the world.
You got the words to change the nation, but you're biding your tongue. You spent your lifetime stuck in silence, afraid you'll say something wrong.
It's called Read All About It by Amela Sanders.
If no one ever hears it, how we gonna learn your song? So come on, come on.
I love that song. It just tells me that I got something on the inside of me that the world needs. And if I got it, you got it, you got it, and everybody else got it. But if you never have that courage and that confidence to speak out, who will save the next person? And so I feel like we all have something to offer the world that can save the next individual to allow them to live to their highest potential. And so that's my goal, to allow everybody to tap into their greatness so that we can be the gift that God created us to be.
'Cause I wanna sing, and I wanna shout. I wanna scream till the words dry out. So put it all on the papers. I'm not afraid, they can read all about it. Read all about it. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
You've been listening to Out of the Blocks.
From radio producer Aaron Hankin.
And music producer Wendell Patrick.
In collaboration with Bashira Mack and WBEZ.
With production assistance from WIPR's Katie Marquette.
You can podcast this series and check out photos online.
At WIPR.org/out of the blocks.
Aaron and Wendell want to thank all of us.
Who took a leap of faith and shared our stories and our lives.
For WYPR and PRX.
This is North Lawndale. In Chicago's West Side, signing off.
Signing off.
Hey guys, Aaron here on the microphone with a quick word of thanks at the end of this episode.
to the NEA, the National Endowment for the Arts, whose generous support has made this episode possible, along with other episodes we've done in places like St. Louis, Seattle, Detroit, Atlanta, and the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. You can find those all in our podcast archive, along with the episodes we produce in our own hometown of Baltimore. Coming up on the next Out of the Blocks, we are back in Baltimore, specifically Southwest Baltimore's neighborhood of Hollins Market.
Baltimore's kind of a segregated city, and Hollins Market is actually one of the few areas where it's a lot of integration in terms of just social and economical demographics.
When we first came to check out the neighborhood, we were already pretty sold, and then they opened the apartment door, and we saw this long historic hallway, and that pretty much sealed the deal for us.
Hollins Market, next time on Out of the Blocks. If you've got a minute, do us a favor, if you would, and drop us a review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps a lot in putting us on the radar of other listeners. Or just tell a friend who you think might enjoy the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll do it again soon. Out of the Blocks is supported by PRX and produced with grant funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Cohen Opportunity Fund, the Hofberger Foundation, Patricia and Mark Joseph Shelter Foundation, Inc., the Kenneth S. Batty Charitable Trust, the MuseWeb Foundation, and the William G. Baker Jr. Memorial Fund, creator of the Baker Artist Portfolios, online at bakerartist.org.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.